Hi everyone, and welcome to what is podcast number 3 in this Meet the Team series. So far we've spoken with Dr. Tamsin Ramsey and also with my Chief of Staff, Georgie Purcell. And they have both very different stories to tell about what they do, you know, within the team. And the person that I've got here today represents very much a departure from what either of those people do for me. Each of us in the team have, to a large extent, a combination of emotive drivers, as well as trying to be practical. Our guest today, Bruce Poon, is my political advisor, who has to try and maintain at all times a very practical approach to things. Because that's the realm that he works within. And he fulfills that in a couple of different ways from my perspective, and that is that Bruce has been around in the political scene in Victoria for a very, very long time, knows the ins and outs and tactics of all of the parties and what they get up to behind the scenes. And he's done so because he's fulfilled and still holds a very unique position in politics, not just in Victoria, but in Australia, in that he's also the president of the Animal Justice Party. So welcome, Bruce.
Thanks, Andy.
And look, I just, can you sort of expand that? The thing I'm curious about is that there is often this sort of differentiation, a demarcation, if you like, between the work that we do within the parliament and the policies of the party, because quite often, and actually the bulk of the time that we're in the parliament, we're asked to vote on bills or motions, etc., that actually have nothing to do with animals. Is it difficult for you to then sort of take off the hat that you've worn for so long and so well, and to look at these things and take a different type of practical approach to them?
Look, I don't think it's difficult, but it is interesting being a parliamentary advisor. We do need to look at a range of bills that come before the parliament that, as you say, have got nothing to do with animals. At least it seems that way. And often we have to look at them with a view to how do they line up with our values. How do they speak to, you know, are they rational? Are they kind to people and animals? Do they promote equality and non-violence? And even then, you know, sometimes that doesn't give you the answer. And so we need to take advice, we need to research, we need to talk to NGOs and interested parties, talk to the other parties, the other political parties, and understand what is really the impact of this new bill going to be. And on top of that, you know, we have the major parties kind of whipping us to the line with their own view about whether we should or shouldn't support these things, and you know, often bringing their own advice to the table. So it's a really interesting part of the role, is dealing with these things. And the other thing we can do with some of these bills, of course, is find a way that actually they might affect animals, and, you know, try and highlight that and bring that to the fore, try and get animals included in the laws that are coming forward in Victoria.
And I guess some of the things that I know that we've talked about this within the office and within the team, could be situations where there might be any prospective bills further on domestic violence, for instance. Because, you know, we've all talked about at different stages the link between, you know, men who abuse animals and then take that, escalate that onto their partners and or children. And, you know, we've talked about that, and indeed one of our other people that we'll be speaking to, part of the team, Nadine Richings, has got a lot of research involved around that. There is these angles that ostensibly on the surface, I suppose, people wouldn't necessarily say, well, that has nothing to do with animals. But if you do dig deeper, we do find that connection.
And we have to connect with the government and its sort of plans about what they're going to do. And, you know, very often we're trying to get things done for animals, but some things are very difficult because they just don't fit into current plans, and some things can be easier because there's a bill coming up that might help us achieve it.
Mm.
And we've got to deal with the ministers and the other MPs and, you know, prosecute that case, argue the case, and work the politics inside the old stone building in Spring Street there to see what can be done.
Mm. So we often talk about leverage, which is a term that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily understand in that respect. I think people understand the term, and I hesitate to use it, but horse trading, where you deliberately go with, you know, an intent to trade off something for something, which we've tried to avoid.
Mm.
But leverage is a different thing altogether. I guess, can you just expand for everybody a little bit on what you think leverage means?
Well, look, as a political party, we're always trying to expand our political leverage on the system, on governments and other parties. And it comes from us running in elections, it comes from preferences in elections, and then it comes from having elected representatives like yourself. And all of this provides leverage, and it provides the ability to sit at a table and negotiate with other parties like the government about what they want and what we want, and ways of cooperating together. It doesn't work typically as horse trading as people might imagine that it does. At least that's not the way we try and play it. But it does give you a seat at the table, and it gives you the opportunity to try and make arguments and win hearts and minds, really, of educate people, really, who are in government about the realities of the world as we see them. And often facts will win the day if you've got an opportunity to present them.
Mm.
And that's one of the opportunities we have now, having MPs in a number of states, is to always be at the table and be able to make the points.
Mm. One of the things that made you quite attractive to me as being a member of the team, and where you sit and what you do, is this clear thinking approach that you have, you know. And many people have commented to me that no matter what's going on in the room, you can always count on Bruce to be level-headed and to be the voice of reason. But I'd like to, if I can, bring up a situation where you perhaps in the past might not have been the voice of reason, indeed within Parliament. Haven't you been thrown out of Parliament?
Once or twice, yeah. I did visit Parliament on a few occasions and got thrown out on one occasion, I remember, for filming. There was somebody making a hell of a ruckus in there about horses being killed in racing, and I was filming that. So they did throw me out of the Parliament and told me not to come back in a hurry. As I turned and left, I said to them, "I'll be back when we get elected." So.
How prophetic. And I just wanted to point that out, because, I mean, Bruce is describing that in very matter-of-fact way and circumstance, but as any of us can imagine, while that was going on, I dare say there was a fair degree of shouting or raised voices and those sorts of things. And I do that because all of us come somewhat from an emotive background. We get involved in politics for animals and the rights of animals because we feel so deeply about what's happening to them that's largely being inflicted on them by human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to bring that to the fore in the conversation we're having, because I want people to always see the kind and an emotional side of everyone who works within the team, that they are a reflection of everyone who works within animal rights out in the broader community, that we are them, and we're fighting for their rights and the causes that they hold dear. We're not just part of the political machine, as it were.
No, absolutely not. I mean, everybody in this team, I think, is driven by their love and concern for the suffering of animals, and, you know, have all come to this movement in a variety of ways, but because they've seen what we need to do, what we can do, And hopefully, we can speak up for them. As I say, I think even if your voice breaks and quivers, we need to do the right thing. We need to speak up for them all the time. Sometimes activism can be very, very confronting. Sometimes even Parliament can be confronting. But I think we can't be shouting at people all the time in Parliament, because ultimately we need to be quite realistic and practical about how we can get things done. That's our role now, is to really be pragmatic, even though we'd like to shout at people about what we want, and we want universal veganism now, but there are steps along the way, and there are things that can be done for animals now that have got majority support in the Parliament. We need to prosecute all of those things.
So I just wanted to touch on that if I can. So this pragmatism of yours, for instance, now I know some of the history of the things that you've been involved in over the years, and so I know where that pragmatism is born of. Do you want to just cover some of the things off of actions that you might have been involved in over the years, or places that you might have been?
Well, I've got a reasonable history in activism. I've swum in front of nuclear ships in the bay. I've been inside the places where animals are kept and where they're slaughtered. Looked along the rows, cage rows and rows of cages, and seen animals confined and suffering. With the sort of sting in your eyes from the smell in these places. And when I look at these animals, I know I can't necessarily help every one of them now, but there are generations of these animals. And it does, when I think about it, it reminds me of the commitment I have, the moral obligation, really, to do whatever I can to help them.
Well, thanks for that, mate. And I think that was a really important point to make, because people don't necessarily see, from when they look at the team that we have and the work that we do, I don't think they really understand that we're all coming from that same perspective. We've all at some point been down these particular lines. And for someone like you, who I think a lot of people see as being that very pragmatic person, a very factual person, they don't understand that political drive that you have has been born out of being on the front line and seeing the suffering. So you do understand very deeply the reasons behind what we're doing, but it also gives you a bit of a steely resolve, I think, to move forward with that.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it also is born of frustration and failure in activism. There's lots of things we can do, and, I wouldn't be critical of other people's actions at all. In animal activism, there's lots of things to do, but we really want to be as effective as possible. And in building this political lever for the movement that we're doing in the Animal Justice Party, I feel like we're really providing a really useful role that can work alongside all of the other activists and NGOs to move the world.
And that's a really good point, actually, because I think people misunderstand the role of the political party versus the NGO, that the NGO can galvanize the community, they can get petitions and they can do all these sorts of things and bring public attention to things, but they don't necessarily have the power within the four walls of Spring Street, as you say, to actually get something changed. This is a unique situation that we're in as a country right now, with having myself and Emma and Mark in New South Wales, and then hopefully we're going to move forward and have other state members of Parliament and federal in the not too distant future. That these are the first time in Australia's history, really, that we've ever had people who are actually sat at the table to bring these matters to the fore. The conversations weren't happening before, and now they are. So with that in mind, and I was talking before with Georgie about how we can't bank on having another 4 years after this or another 4 years after that. I mean, we'd love to say, yep, we're doing the work to ensure that we're going to get elected and get other members elected, and we're just going to move forward as a powerhouse then. However, we can only really bank on the time that we have, which is these 4 years. In the remaining time that we have, what do you see as the things that you would like to see us have accomplished?
Look, we have a list of campaigns as long as your arm, and we are constantly revising which ones are coming to into season and are going to be able to be pushed through. And every new bill that comes to the Parliament is another opportunity to look at how animals are being considered and treated in society, and can we improve that? And I'd also like to see us, I'd like to see us attempt some really big things, because, you know, governments of all stripes, they're kind of conservative, even the progressive ones. They kind of think of, you know, what can we do that's reasonable, that's well supported, that's, you know, that's not revolutionary. But the world's got big problems. There are big environmental problems, and the climate emergency demands that we are going to have to think seriously about big actions that change the way we organize the world and the way we affect the structure of the surface of the earth. And I'd like to see us pushing some of these issues to the fore over the next few years.
So in the same way that the current Victorian government is bringing treaty with First Nations people, this is revolutionary within the Australian political system. It's never been done before. And certainly they're trying to drag the federal government along for the ride and shame them into action. So you see that perhaps Victorian government could also be making a very bold and game-changing statement with policy in that regard to the use of animals and food and climate, etc.
Yeah, well, we know what the science says, and the need for change in our agricultural systems. And we want a just transition for people who work on the land and work with, you know, with currently with animals, but with crops. We need to find ways where all of these people can have a viable business and lifestyle, looking after the land and looking after the planet.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Bruce, for giving us all those insights, and thanks for sitting down and having a chat. And you know, I think it's really important that people do understand, you know, the inner workings of each of the people on the team. I think it gives them a better understanding of why we're doing what we're doing, and that, you know, we're part of the movement. We're not sitting aside from it. And that they're part of us as well. So thanks, mate.
Pleasure, Andy.